Now, I don't know how you felt coming in this morning, but from some of the conversations I've had, from some of the people I've spoken to, there are some plans that have gone a bit astray. There are some plans that haven't quite worked out according to plan. And several people I've spoken to, that's true. And we all know that sensation. We all understand what it's like to have plans go wrong. For one thing, we just celebrated 35 years of marriage, Rosie and myself, and it was never her plan to marry an Englishman. She went to Texas. She went to Texas to marry a rich Texan. So she introduces me as Plan B sometimes. And sometimes she introduces me as her first husband, which is a little worrying. She never planned to be married to a pastor. That's fair enough. I never planned to be married to a pastor's wife. But we are, and that's how things have worked out. You're familiar with Burns's little poem. Any Scots people in here? Nobody Scottish in here. That's good, so you can't criticize my accent. In one of the verses of his Ode to a Mouse, and the story behind this poem is that he was plowing one day and discovered that he had plowed up the winter habitation of a mouse, and he'd sort of destroyed her livelihood. And he wrote this poem in response to thinking about how she never expected that to happen. And he said, "But Moosey, thou art nor thy lane. You're not on your own, Mousey. Improving foresight may be vain. The best laid schemes of mice and men gang after glay. And lay us not but grief and pain for promised joy." Translation, the best laid plans of mice and men are often gone awry. They often go astray and leave us wondering why. When we expected the joy of a plan come together and we get the confusion of a plan not quite met. We're in Romans chapter 15 this morning, the second part of that chapter. And I'm talking about Paul and the way his plans didn't quite come together, the way his plans didn't quite work out, and how we can learn from Paul's experience and from Paul's attitude. Now, before we get to this text in Romans, which will begin at Romans 15, 22, let me just give you a brief synopsis of Paul's career. Because there are some lessons in there. I don't know if you have ever thought this, but you know, anybody who's sort of getting invested into their faith, and once in a while this thought crosses your mind, oh, I would really like to be like the Apostle Paul. Oh, I'd really like to be like him, because he was so forthright and he just got on with it. And just let me review some of his career steps as he became Paul. Well, first of all, he planned to eradicate Christianity. He wanted to nip it in the bud. He thought it was a false heresy. And God redirected that plan. So he became an apostle, a Christian apostle. Now then, immediately after his conversion, he planned to convince the Jews in Damascus that Christ was their Messiah. Didn't work. He got sent off to Jerusalem. Then he planned to convince the Jews in Jerusalem. Acts chapter 9, 26 and following. And that didn't work either. It just started a riot. And so the church in Jerusalem, the baby church in Jerusalem, decided that it would be best if Paul was shipped off to where he came from, which was Tarsus. So they packaged him off home. And then there's this lovely line, Romans 9, 31, and says, "And there was peace in Jerusalem in the church." They had to move Paul out of the way before the church could be peaceful in its setting. This is a lovely line. It's just a little bit tongue-in-cheek, I think. Well, then he went on the first missionary journey and he tried to convince the Jews in central Turkey that Jesus Christ was the Messiah. Fail. Didn't work. So then he resorted to convincing the Gentiles. This is where his ministry really took off in Acts 13, the middle of Acts 13. Well, when he started to preach to the Gentiles, first of all, they called him a god. I don't think that was his plan. Then he was mobbed. I don't think that was his plan. Then he got stoned. And I don't mean he just, no. Then he got stoned, literally stoned. I don't think he'd planned for that. So he reported back to Jerusalem and he planned to take the results of the Jerusalem council back to Turkey. And you remember in Acts 16, he wanted to go up to the north of Turkey and he wanted to go to the south of Turkey, and the Spirit of God and the Spirit of Christ prevented him doing Turkey. Said, go over to Macedonia, go to Europe. So that wasn't his plan, but that's where he went. God funneled him to Europe. So then he planned to stay in Macedonia, particularly in Thessalonica, but after 3 weeks of preaching, fail. He got run out of town by a mob of Jews. So he was sent to Athens via Berea after just 3 weeks in Thessalonica, and that's why he had to write those two little letters to the Thessalonians. He wanted to write to them to fill in the gaps of the things that he hadn't had time to teach them. So the two letters to the Thessalonians are really to follow up on just 3 brief weeks when Paul was there to teach them the things of the faith in Christ. Well, then he spent 18 months in Corinth, and the church at Corinth that was established there, they really became his problem children. They are really the only church that he ever had to correct or rebuke. I'm sure he didn't plan for that. I'm sure he would have liked a nice, easy time with the Corinthian church, but it wasn't so. It didn't go according to plan. They were his rebel church. He spent 2 years in Ephesus, working alongside Timothy. Then he spent 3 months in Greece, in Athens and Corinth again, which is where he wrote Romans, towards the end of his third missionary journey. And he writes to Romans these words. This is why I have often been hindered from coming to you. His plans keep getting redirected. That's why his plan to come and visit Rome has been thwarted and thwarted and thwarted for actually several years now. Because he went back to Jerusalem with the offering of the churches, the offering that he talks about a lot in 2 Corinthians. And once he got to Jerusalem, he got into trouble and he ended up spending 2 years in jail in Palestine, in Caesarea on the coast. 2 years in jail there when he was really hoping to just touch base in Jerusalem and then go to Rome, and then from Rome go on to Spain. We're going to read that here now. When he does eventually go to Rome, it's not according to the way he planned at all. He's under arrest. And as he arrives in Rome, he's not a free man able to speak. He's under house arrest. He's able to visit with his friends. But then, a little while later, we find him actually in a dungeon in Rome, writing his second letter to Timothy just before his execution. Now, as part of our anniversary holiday just last week, Rosie and I went to that dungeon in Rome. It's called the Mamertine Jail. Most of the tour guides don't know where it is, but it's near the Forum, close to the Colosseum. And it's been a jail since 600 years BC. It's just a pit in the ground with a prison fortress built over it. And the Romans basically took it over from the Greeks, and the Greeks had taken it over from the Persians at the time. And it had always been a jail for 6 centuries before Christ. And so Paul found himself in that hole in the ground as his life came to an end. And in that hole in the ground, which is much smaller than this room, and where as many prisoners as could fit were put, and there were no toilet facilities, and there was a spring in there that would flood it every once in a while, so you'd be up to your knees in water and whatever else. There he wrote that last letter to Timothy, his letter of encouragement, his letter of counsel, his letter of wisdom to a young pastor who was just setting out to lead the church in Ephesus. Do you think he planned that? Do you think he'd planned any of it, really? But listen, as we meet him, at the end of his third missionary journey, after so many crossed plans, after so many diversions, after so many switchbacks in his course, he says, I've often been hindered from coming to you. Well, yes. But now that there is no more place for me to work in these regions, in other words, the Middle East for Paul is now a fished out pond. He wants to go where the gospel has never been heard before. And since I've been longing for many years to see you, writes Paul to the Romans, I plan to do so when I go to Spain. And I hope to visit you while passing through and to have you assist me on my journey there. After a career of chopped up plans, after a career of things that he had anticipated doing, going weirdly wrong, he's still making plans. He hasn't given up planning, but I'll tell you what, he's learned to hold his plans lightly. He's learned to hold his plans with a very soft touch because he knows that one, God is sovereign, and our plans don't always line up with God's intention for us. And two, stuff happens. He has learned throughout his career as an apostle that things get chopped up. But he's still comfortable making more plans. He wants to visit Rome. He's never seen the Christians in Rome before. It's a new place for him to go to. He wants to meet them. He already knows some of them because they have gone from wherever he was to there. But he's never been to the church in Rome before. And he's anxious and he's not shy because he wants to use them for a springboard to get to Spain where the gospel had never been heard before. He wants to use them as a mission sending agency. He wants to get their help to go on and keep going on. And keep going on. Paul learned to hold his plans lightly, but it didn't paralyze him. It didn't stop him planning. When things got chopped up, he just rested and relaxed and said, okay, this is where I am now. This is what's going on now. But who knows? Next week, next month, next year, in 5 years' time, here's what I plan to do, and we'll just see what God does with that plan. We have to hold our plans lightly, otherwise we get resentful and bitter and disappointed if the plan changes. When Rosie and I were living and ministering in Texas, I had never planned to come back to the UK. 10 years ago, if you'd asked me, you know, what do you plan to do, Terry? Well, I'm teaching a little bit at the seminary, and I've got this great little church going in Dallas. Yeah, this is it. This is my plan. I'm going to ride off into the sunset in Texas, and I've got my teaching, and I've got my preaching, and I've got my flock, and everything's great. So that's my plan. And God said, no, that's not your plan. You've got to go back to the UK. You've got to go home to England to minister there. But we'd been in Texas 30 years, a generation. We'd raised our children there. We had a house there. We had put down deep roots. Our plan was there. And when God said, move, when God said, here is an opportunity for ministry that really, you are very well fit for and very well suited for and very well prayed up for, as Mordecai said to Esther, for such a time as this you have been made ready, then we had to start pulling up those roots. And it hurt. We had to start severing connections. We had to start breaking ties that had bound us for so long. And it hurt. And we learned in that experience 10 years ago, Rosie and myself, we learned, hold your plans lightly. Chuck Swindoll, the fellow who planted the ministry that I work for, when he had a church in California, Corrie Ten Boom, I don't know if you're familiar with that name, but Corrie Ten Boom was a member of his congregation, and she came up to speak to him once towards the end of her life. And he was asking wisdom of her and going through some of her life experiences. And she took his hand. He's told me this story many times. She took his hand and she said, Pastor Chuck, when you have a plan, don't grip it too tightly, because it will hurt when God has to pry your fingers apart to make you let go of that plan. It's a fascinating lesson. It's a beautiful image of what we do sometimes with our own plans, our own ideas, our own objectives, and we run ahead of God. Or we simply do our best, and we're doing the best we can, and we're following what we think is God's plan, but suddenly there's a zigzag, and the plan changes. And we have to hold those plans lightly, otherwise we get frustrated, disappointed, sometimes bitter, sometimes resentful. Paul had learned that lesson many times. I've already catalogued for you some of the ways that his plans were changed up through the course of his career as an apostle. But he wasn't afraid of continuing to make plans. He wasn't afraid of planning on. He just knew that, you know, God willing, this is the plan. And God may change that. Circumstances may change that. But God is still sovereign in it all. God is still there. God is still my final plan. I want to read for you a little verse out of 2 Corinthians. It's, as soon as I find it, I'll tell you the page number if you're using the church Bible. 2 Corinthians chapter 5. And it's a beautiful little verse, and I was reminded of it this week. I was reminded of it this week because I lost a good friend, a good mentor. One of my professors from Dallas Seminary passed away. And actually, he was an elder at Chuck's church in Dallas. A dear friend to both Chuck and myself. And an incredibly delightful man. He always had a good word. He always had sharp wisdom. He always had an encouraging aspect to him. And he passed away this week. And as part of remembering his life, I was reminded about one of his favorite verses. And it's 2 Corinthians chapter 5. And it's verses 6 to 9, and this is Paul talking, but I want you to take it on. I want you to take it on board. Therefore, this is Paul, remember, lots of switchback changes, lots of changes of plans in his career. Therefore, we're always confident and know that as long as we are at home in the body, we are away from the Lord. Okay, in other words, living here is not quite the same as being with God, which is our ultimate plan. That's our ultimate destination. That's where we know we can head towards. And so we live by faith, not by sight. We hold the plans lightly, and in faith we step out and we work our plan. And if it doesn't work, well, It's not because we didn't have faith. It's just because things changed. We are confident, I say, and would prefer to be away from the body and at home with the Lord. That is the ultimate plan. That is your destiny. That's where you need to be headed. That's probably the only fixed point in your constellation right now. That's your North Star. That's your pole. So we make it our goal, and here is what I want you to take home with you. So we make it our goal to please Him, whether we are at home in the body or away from it. It's a beautiful thought. For a man whose path has been switched back and changed and corrected and challenged so many times as he preached for God, as he spoke Christ to a waiting world. This man, he said, wherever I end up, no matter what my circumstances, this is what I want to do. I want to please God. Rosie and I have sort of rephrased that. It's become our family motto, and that is, blossom where you're planted. Be it Texas, be it Timbuktu, be it Ashford, be it Farnham. Blossom where you're planted. Please God wherever you find yourself. Work for His glory and for His reputation, and just enjoy the sensation of pleasing Him no matter your circumstances. No matter how badly your plans don't line up with what you expected. I planned to live forever, but I didn't plan to get old. I mean, I was anticipating being stuck at 35 all my life. That was going to be great. But here we are. Gray hair, snow on the roof. And, you know, it's okay. It's okay because I'm here and I plan to blossom wherever I planted. You do the same. Wherever God has you at the moment, whatever God has for your life and whatever your plans are, commit them to Him and make yourself and make Him a promise today that wherever you are, wherever you end up, and no matter what switches and changes in the plans happen, wherever you end up, please God. Because that is the mark of a life well lived. It's not a succession of plans that came together. It is simply, did you please God wherever you ended up? Somebody said to me once that we don't see the game. It's like we live under a chessboard. We live underneath the chessboard, and all we hear are the scrapes and the clicks as the pieces get moved around. We don't necessarily see the strategies. We don't see the end game. We don't see what plays are being made. These are heavenly things. These are God's business. Underneath the board, we simply have to please Him wherever we end up. No matter what our destiny, no matter what our fate, our plan ultimately is to be with Him and to be able to say that in this life, in this brief race on this earth, we pleased Him. Make it your goal. Make it your promise today. Please God wherever He has you. Don't get resentful because the plans have shifted. Don't get bitter because things didn't work out the way you thought they should. Don't get tangled up in your own plans. Simply please God wherever you are. Pray with me, please. Heavenly Father, you have invested us with creativity and imagination, and so we all love to make plans. But we also know, Lord, as we read reports from all around the world, that things happen and plans change, and we don't always see why. We don't always understand what to do next. But Lord, encourage us. Encourage us to honor you and to please you wherever we find ourselves today, wherever our plan takes us tomorrow. Whatever is happening next week, let us, Lord, be convicted to please you, whatever it might be. Help us to do that, Father, through the grace afforded in your Son, Jesus Christ. Amen.